Well, hey there. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is the day of Game 1 of the World Series.
Yes, and the weather is hopefully cooperating. Looks like it is. Heard there was a rainbow in Boston.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so game on.
Doing good, yeah. Actually, I was one of the things I was looking at. Actually, I'm going to just start off, just do this here.
Yeah.
Just for those who are curious, we actually have
There's the game one starting lineups. Here we go. Dodgers on the left, Red Sox on the right. Let's hope it's a right night for us.
Yeah, I was hearing some stories today about Manny Machado, who's apparently one of the most hated people amongst players because he plays dirty.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, people made him out sort of like he was the sort of...
Oh, Manny Machado. Well, he got some grief because he said he doesn't hustle or something.
Well, I heard he'll purposely like spike somebody.
Yeah,
like,
it was Aguilera or somebody in the... was it the Houston?
So they're liking him
Ty
Cobb.
Who did they play to get here? I'm already forgetting.
What?
Oh, Milwaukee. Yeah, right.
And actually, my upstairs tenant, Steve, he's from Los Angeles most recently, so he's a big Dodgers fan.
Yeah, people are, much more so than the Angels. They're more suburb.
He was asking me today if it would be okay for him to wear his Dodgers hat and Dodgers regalia around town. I said, if it was a few decades ago, maybe not, but we're sort of open-minded.
Yeah, also, it's not the Yankees.
And it's not the Yankees, so that's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And Dave Roberts, who really saved us... is the manager.
Right. I actually was thinking about that today. Yeah. I saw a picture of Dave Roberts and I thought to myself, when they introduce all the players and the manager,
he's going to get a big ovation,
I think.
Well, did you read the story that Alex Cora they played together for 3 seasons on LA? I didn't even know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. And then Dave Roberts reluctantly went to the Red Sox, but Alex said, it'll be okay. And then he was here just that season. We won the World Series, and then they're both now managers, and they're good friends. So I think it's a great story.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really great story. I love the spin about this being the first time since, was it 1915?
2016. I'm sorry, 1916. 1916.
You're off by a century then,
Judy. No, it was 1916. That's when we won the World
1916.
Series. And they were the Brooklyn...
The Dodgers.
No, they weren't the Dodgers. They were called something else.
Well, the Dodgers is a shortened version of the name Trolley Dodgers.
Right, but that's... After this was, they were the Brooklyn. I forget it.
No,
it was in the article.
Yeah, all right, okay. Well,
I'm right about this. I read the sports. Did you read the sports page today?
No. I will hang my head in shame and yield.
It's not the Barons or something, but it's something. And then they must have changed it when they went to Brooklyn.
And with the Yankees, were they like the New York Knickerbockers originally?
I don't know. Wasn't that the basketball team?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Right.
We'll look it up. During that 3 minutes in between, I'll look it up on my iPhone. I have one.
Right. Anyway, so I've been just saying, I'm really looking forward to this contest between the Red Stockings and the Trolley Dodgers.
Okay, right. Which I've not heard that, but that's great.
Right. 8:09 tonight is game time.
Right. Now, were you a Brooklyn? You were grew up around there.
I grew
up in
New York.
But they were gone by then?
Yes.
They had gone to L.A. in the 50s, right?
Yeah. Before I was really conscious. So I think it was around...
Right, because you're younger than I am.
Maybe in 1957.
Seven, exactly. Sandy Koufax.
And they absolutely broke the heart.
They did.
Every Brooklyn Dodgers
fan. Was that after the Giants left or before? Because they left. New York Giants left. The Dodgers left.
I think in successive years.
Right. And then the Mets came.
Well, that's what created the... There was a lot of desire.
Right.
They had two National League teams up to 1956.
Right.
Two years later, they had none.
So you mean they only had one American League team?
They always had just the Yankees, yeah.
Interesting.
So that was the setting, and then there was a lot of pressure that led to the expansion of the American
League.
Not just
them, but Toronto and the Montreal Expos,
and the National League
in
62. So, and one of the teams was the New York Mets, which is heartening.
They were my favorite.
The New York Mets?
When I was an adolescent,
really?
From the Jersey.
I was a Yankees
area.
Fan. I admit it.
Yeah,
I know.
Very distasteful. I was a Yankees fan in the late 90s when they kept winning.
I was
Joe
a Yankee.
Torre.
I actually never disliked the Yankees, but I soured on them in the days of George Steinbrenner.
That was a long many years
though. It just got to me by around late 70s. I said, "Oh,
really?"
Yeah, and
late 70s. He was still around then in the 90s.
Yeah, and then and then I was living up here, and no, actually, come think of it, when I first moved up here in '78, I actually went and watched the ball game, at the Muddy Charles Pub at MIT.
Oh my goodness.
The one game playoff between the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Huh.
And when the game was over, after Bucky Dent hit the 3-run home run and Carl Yastrzemski popped out to end the game.
What year was that?
78.
That was 78?
Yeah. And when the game ended, I couldn't, because I was a Yankees fan, I just wasn't able to quite repress it.
Yeah.
So I went, yes! And then all the eyes in the bar turned to me. And I got up and ran out of the Muddy Charles Pub.
Wow. That was 78.
1978.
What happened in 86 then? What was that?
86
that was also a big to-do.
That was Bill Buckner's big year.
Buckner.
Yeah,
okay.
And the ball went through Buckner's when we were to win the championship.
Okay, and then Aaron Boone was 2003.
And then everything fell apart.
Before. Okay, all right, I get it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor Bill Buckner. Yeah.
Poor Bill Buckner, but he came back.
Yeah.
Came back to play with the Red Sox.
Right, but also we didn't lose that series because of Bill Buckner, let's face it. That was not the seventh game.
It was the sixth game.
People forget that.
But a lot of us felt that, like, you lost
momentum.
You choked right at that moment,
and
there was no way we were going to win game seven.
Well, look what happened, though, in 2004 when we won four games in a row. Never done before.
I'll tell you, actually, another thing. So since this is the all baseball version of Cambridge Inside Out.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, I know.
All right, so what happened then is game six was rained out, right? No, excuse me, game seven was
rained
out.
Are we talking back to 86?
In 86, right?
You have the better
So
memory.
Then it had to be delayed for an extra day. So there was this, this one day of, like, where people were just fearing the inevitable. Remember, we all still believed we're doomed to lose forever.
Okay.
Right? And we just choked in game 66. And then it was this day to just dwell.
Because that would have been the clincher, right? We could have won that
sixth
game. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember I went to, you know, get breakfast at Mal's Restaurant, which used to be over by Boston University.
Because
I was over at BU at the time.
Yeah.
And there was an old guy, I forget his name, but he, you know, he worked at Mal's. It's a deli, right? And there, you know, a lot of people in the place. And he started talking. He just started philosophically just talking about the game and the breaking of his heart.
Oh.
And the entire place, which had been a buzz of activity, just went
just quiet
dead
and listening.
Silence.
Oh, wow.
And it was this incredible moment of, like, Red Sox misery. By the way, this is Mal's. This is where George...
I remember that place, I think, because I went to school at BU.
What was his name? Scott? I was about to say George Scott, but he used to play third base for the Red Sox.
I don't know.
He was like a regular there.
I was so close to the
had a beer next to him over in the dugout, which was a bar a couple doors down.
Which is still there, I think.
Yeah. Hopefully.
I think it is.
So it was kind of a hangout for Red Sox players. There was a shortcut to Fenway Park right down the street. You know?
Right.
And it was just really profound, you know. Very different than the Red Sox these days.
Right. I don't think they go to Game On or all those places. Oh, sure. Yeah. But that 04 series with the Yankees was it. That series alone. And after that, it was like they swept the either Cubs or St. Louis, I think. But that, everybody was up at night.
You know,
every night it was an overtime.
What I said in 04 about that was that it was really the Yankee series, which was the pivotal one.
We were down, slaughtered
19-8 in game three.
Right.
And then we were about to lose game four.
Right. It was like the inning eight or something, right?
Yeah, and I think it was it even in the ninth inning? I think
it might
we were
have
down
been the
with
ninth.
Two strikes.
It was crazy.
And Dave Roberts, manager.
Was that the one?
Yes. And he stole second. He came in as a pinch runner,
and
stole
second.
And
it made it go into extra innings,
and then we tied up. We went in, I think it was...
And then we won it.
Poppy, I think, might have hit a home run or something.
Two of those games were
And we said, okay, so now it's 3-1. There's no way we're going to win next 3-1. Bang, bang,
bang. Bang, I know. Unbelievable.
And what I said to people was that, you know, if this really was the curse of the Bambino, it had to have, like, a mystical, impossible way to break the curse, right? So you had to be against the Yankees.
Right.
It had to be like you were on the verge of elimination.
Right. No one has come back from 3-0.
Nobody had ever done it.
3-1
is
different.
And then we came back, and I said, you know, when we're going to St. Louis for a World Series, there's no way we're not going to win this.
And we swept, I think.
Right. And I actually said to my class, this is at Harvard Extension class, I said, you do realize that if we do manage to sweep this, which of course is not going to happen, that when we win in St. Louis, it will be during an eclipse, a lunar eclipse.
No way. It was?
And the moon was in lunar eclipse when we were winning game four in the World Series. And I said, if this is not magic.
Exactly.
I mean, you want to add to the curse of the Bambino. This is how you break the curse of the Bambino.
Right.
You need magic. You need alchemists. You need.
Do you know that the manager of the St. Louis, what was his name?
I don't remember now.
He works for the Red Sox.
There you go. Yeah, we're taking over the world.
Yeah, so anyway. Well, back to more mundane things.
Now, back to mundane things.
Zoning, building, affordable, or subsidized, or middle income,
sort
or AMI,
exciting.
Or FAR.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, as we have spoken about in various times over the past few months, the approximate three-year
right.
cycle of this Envision Cambridge, which really goes back further. I think the original order calling for a master plan, I think might have
Well, that was, what, 14 maybe?
I think it might have been in about March or April of 2014.
Okay.
And then, and there was some controversy about how to do it. I think Dennis Carlone was new on the council. He wanted to do it all within his ordinance committee. And then others said, no, it should all be done by city staff. So the compromise was to get a consultant in. And then they would do it sort of with city staff, but with a outside consultant.
So the master plan never got developed. It morphed into Envision.
The great fiction about this was that people were saying, well, Cambridge has no master plan. The truth is most cities and towns don't have planning departments, so they're required to have a master plan on file, in lieu of having an actual planning department
that
does
have
this
something
continuously.
To go by. Okay,
right?
I get you.
Yeah,
all right.
So the thing is, Cambridge actually has a whole library of neighborhood studies, planning studies, you name it. And if you basically put them all together in a loose leaf binder,
it would be a master
there's
plan.
Your master plan.
Yeah.
So it's not that we didn't have one.
Right.
We most certainly did.
But somebody had to sort of make it sort of
cohesive.
Oh,
and it was, as any good master plan, it was under a constant state of revision.
Which meant that you couldn't really maybe get the right version at the right time, maybe?
No. I mean, the thing is that planning is an evolutionary thing. So, you don't like decide on this is the plan and then 20
years
later
you say
you can't
change it.
Right, but
I'm just saying, is there a way you could see what is current all across the city?
It's all on file, and it was all publicly
available.
And it
was all updated across the city.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm talking about across city, because the thing is they would focus like on K2, C2, Kendall Square, Central Square.
Right, but I'm just saying a cohesive document that would at least be in real time.
It wasn't bound together. It was basically you were referred to the studies, and this is the city's current thinking about this.
So it would say current, and you could see it. Okay.
And it was actually an overarching document that was done in, I think, 1993. Hmm. Called the Growth Policy Document.
Oh, dear.
Which was
only
called,
you would
it
know
was
these
entitled,
things.
No, I'm not the only one. But it says, Toward a Sustainable Cambridge,
Ooh,
a Growth
use
Policy
the word
Document.
Sustainable. In 93, that's pretty innovative then.
Well, there were a lot of the controversies then are a bit different than the controversies today. Rent control was in place at that time.
93, I thought it was...
Referendum was 1994. Question 9,
right.
They booted it
what
out.
What about trees? Was that an issue?
I don't know that it was a sort of an explicit issue.
Yeah, more trees probably.
But, to our kind of credit, those of us who were sort of in the vanguard promoting recycling in 89.
That's when I
kind of
joined.
I joined
in 90.
There was a bit of a kind of the wind that followed that carried with it a lot of talk about. I was actually part of a group with Fred Small and Rosalie Anders and a few others called Cambridge Eco, the Environmental Citizens Organization. It never came to much of anything.
Okay.
But it kind of created a bit of a mindset toward going a little bit beyond
environmental
recycling.
Environmental concerns,
More like environmental concerns.
Well, the first recycling director wasn't until, 89?
It was 89,
Jan Setti.
That's right. Yeah. So the thing is, that's around when Cambridge Eco was put together. Mm-hmm. And Rosalie Anders, who was one of our regulars, actually was hired by the city and worked in community development doing that.
She now works with... Not bicycles, that's Karen.
I think she's retired from the city, but the thing is
she was back in the transportation.
So she was part of that whole division. So by 1992-93, there were anti-development people who were kind of running rampant around the city, the Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods.
Was that when that started?
They had pressed on this parking freeze, which was
right.
The interim parking freeze was really kind of a settlement between the city as part of a lawsuit that was brought by CCLN. And it basically, you know, that's what started to regulate things like commercial development.
Mm.
So the biggest concern at the time was the proliferation of commercial development.
Was it going on in Kendall back then? I can't remember.
It was ramping up. What kicked off the whole thing, quite honestly, was the development of One Kendall Square, which is, of course, as everybody knows, not in Kendall Square. It's not too far.
Yeah, I mean, that people refer to that area.
It was a marketing thing, right? But when they built that whole thing out of the old Boston woven hose relics, there was a parking garage got built, and which just happened,
by the theater.
Yeah, and it was in the backyard of somebody who then became a prominent activist for this. The lawsuits followed.
And it turns out
Cambridge had actually signed on voluntarily to a cap on
cars.
Commercial parking. But it was always unsettled. Is that like for a fee as opposed to employee parking for without a fee? So it's part of it because you work there, right?
So
that was never fully adjudicated, but that there was a lawsuit, and then they settled on this commercial parking, interim parking freeze, which was later eclipsed by the Vehicle Trip Reduction Ordinance, which is now part of the state implementation plans of the Clean Air Act, which went on to the state DEP and then on to the
And that's
EPA.
Still in effect?
Yes.
Or has Trump kind of gotten rid of it?
But the thing is, so that was kind of the background of all this thing. So now we're giving like a history lesson here, right? So by 1993, so there were people, they were concerned because there was going to be a cap on commercial growth. And they didn't want it to be just a brick wall because, in fact, you know, remember this was days of rent control. Revenue was very limited from the residential sector because of rent control. So the city was becoming more and more and more dependent
on
commercial growth. So the thing is, if you put a brick wall and said there shall be no more commercial growth because the Cambridge Residence for Growth Management or its predecessor CRLN didn't want to have any, then that kind of puts the city in a bad position. So the city was really hot to trot to replace the vehicle trip, excuse me, the parking freeze with this vehicle trip reduction ordinance, which is why, you know, we had a commuter mobility coordinator was hired. It is why we created an environmental and transportation planning division within CDD. It was originally in the city manager's office because it was so legally sensitive. And that eventually led to things like the promotion of bicycle lanes and various the promotion of alternate transportation because that was part of the agreement that was the vehicle trip reduction ordinance.
Is that when the shuttle came about? I know Henrietta Davis had
the Cambridge Side Galleria shuttle was
not just that one, the one that comes into Cambridge Port. It's called something else.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think it's the Charles River Management Association run by a guy named Jim Gascon. And those actually were starting up around that time, early 90s.
But that would help people.
Well, yeah, and it actually became a very important thing for commercial development because if you were going to build, if you really, really wanted to build a commercial building, like in Kendall Square, it became kind of standard process that you had to get your approvals for a transportation plan. And that almost invariably meant having things like free or reduced transit passes, T-passes for your employees.
Make it more expensive for parking.
Right, and also signing on for having a shuttle service.
Right.
So you could take the T and hop on the
bus. I think it got subsidized because it cost more than people paid.
Yeah, but the thing is that for a while...
Easy Ride, that's what it's called, isn't it?
Maybe that is, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think it's all run by the same group. Right?
Maybe, but that's
right. So anyway, that was the backdrop here. And by 1993, they sort of settled into a kind of a standard, you know. They were like, I forget exactly how many major, clearly elucidated principles were part of the growth policy document. It's on my mind, by the way, because you forced me.
What?
You didn't force me. You suggested I watch a planning board hearing from September 25th.
Well, other people had suggested it to you. I was just curious about this one aspect of it.
A city councilor suggested I should watch it. And I watched it last night.
Okay.
Pretty much complete.
It was 3 hours.
I sped forward some of the boring parts, but
mainly it was about the Envision plan.
Yeah, I mean, I knew pretty much everything the Envision people were
saying. Sure, because they'd done these presentations, but it was their response.
But it was the commentary from the planning board. And it was Hugh Russell, who actually really, really emphasized.
He's the one on the left. Yes. Right, yeah.
So Hugh, he emphasized, he says, well, are there any things as part of this new envision process that are basically going to sort of throw out principles that were part of our last 25 years in the growth policy document?
Oh.
And in fact, there were some clear contradictions now.
Huh.
You know?
Like what?
Well, things like preserving existing residential neighborhood character.
Oh.
Okay, so if you bring in one of the two different, and one in particular is 100% affordable housing overlay proposal.
The affordable housing, yeah.
Which would actually sort of drop very large scale buildings in the midst of existing neighborhoods.
Well, it could drop very large scale.
It would allow it to be done as of right.
Right. I know I had to look all that up, but that can't be tweaked at all. Wouldn't they still need approval of some sort?
Well, see, here's the problem, and I think this is a really serious legal problem.
Yeah.
Is that right now you could do projects. Mm-hmm. You have to get them. You have to buy the property first.
Well, that's the first barrier.
So they're sort
right
of trying to rig the benefits to make it so that housing, nonprofit housing developers can.
Well, they're trying to level the playing field.
They are leveling the playing field by unleveling the playing field.
Right. I understand. There's definitely issues with it. Yeah.
Right. So they're basically rigging it so that this little cabal that meets with Chris Cotter.
People aren't going to like you using these words.
No.
Rigging and cabal.
Well, I'm sorry. But the thing is, they haven't hidden the fact that basically they have this very small universe of partners. And they basically talked to them and said, what kind of density do you need to be able to build?
Well, it makes sense. They are the affordable housing developers. I mean, you are going to talk to them to find out what they need.
What they want.
You may not agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, but the thing is that, of course, the truth is, and this is Quentin Zondervan's point, is that you don't need to change all those rules here. All you have to do is provide them more money. If you provide them more money, then they can just buy the properties.
Well,
it's totally
competitive.
It's just that if they're working on
a limited...
Is that
what the city wants to do?
I don't know. But the thing is that it's certainly an option to say, well, if this land is going to cost you $3 million and then the other guy's dropping $4 million on the barrel, right, because you only had $3 million to spend, but we'll give you an extra million to work with.
I wish it was that close, but I have a feeling it's like double.
Well, I don't know.
But I see your point.
It's not just the land cost. It's also the
building
cost.
Well, it's the building cost. And for them to do affordable housing...
So they don't have the promise of the bigger returns, that's why.
Right.
So
but
the thing
is, as of right mean there's no public hearings?
Well, see, that's the thing. Right now, if you wanted to drop a big cube into a district, you could do it under what they call comprehensive zoning, which is under Chapter 40B of the state.
Oh, you could do that now.
And it's subject to design review, and it's appealable. So if there are people who are really outraged by it, they can appeal it, which could slow
it
down.
Okay, but they still would have to buy the property.
Right. So you buy the property, you put in your proposal, I'm going to build this big thing. And then the thing is neighbors could say, hold on a minute, wait on it. We think this is kind of outrageous. We insist you must have some setbacks from the
But wouldn't they say that whether it was a for-profit developer? Wouldn't they also be complaining about a big building?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So...
But the thing is under Chapter 40B, it's not as of right. So in other words, you come in, you're allowed more density.
You're building affordable?
Right, but let's be clear.
All right.
Chapter 40B is state law.
Right.
State law says we're going to give you the authority to do certain things.
Right.
Because we're going to try and promote subsidized housing.
Right.
All right. But it's still appealable because almost everything from the state basically makes things so that if somebody wants to challenge it, there's a means to challenge.
Sure. Okay.
Right. That's just fair. Right.
Yeah.
What the city wants to do, or at least they're saying, this isn't really a proposal. It's just an idea.
You're talking about the affordable housing overlay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But basically that would say, okay, we want you to go beyond 40B, right? So we're going to take away any right to appeal.
We're going to let you do what you want.
And there's nothing in state law that says you can do that too, right? So I think that you would have to sort of go to the state and say, well, you have to pass Chapter 40B supersize. That basically says that the city can also remove the right of appeal.
But why would it have to go to the state? Why can't the city just do their own?
The city
process?
Can't. Because this is Massachusetts, and in Massachusetts, you can't roll your own. You know, you have to every authority that a city or state has is derived from the state granting it to you.
Okay, so...
And there is an existing Chapter 40B that
but
allows...
But why are you even using the word 40B? Why can't you just...
Because 40B is actually how some projects in Cambridge are done today.
Okay, I see.
Including affordable housing projects.
Right,
they,
but they,
they are affordable housing
But they keep talking about all the projects they've lost out on. Which they want.
Well, they got it because the thing is in addition to doing 40B projects, they want more. You know, and that's what this is about. They're saying it's a more, and it's a crisis here. But the thing is, and I've said this time and time again, is that the affordability crisis is not strictly speaking about the lack of subsidized housing. 15%
no,
of the city's housing stock is already subsidized housing.
I think we have a lot. I think what people really want is middle-income housing.
Right.
And if they want to call that affordable, which
But these proposals don't deliver that.
Are you sure about that?
Well, the thing is, even Chris Cotter from CDD says is that our middle-income programs are not, people aren't running to do it to that. Because if you're middle-income and
you... You mean you're talking about the inclusionary zoning ones?
Right. So typically...
Do they even qualify, though?
Qualify. Even when they do, but the thing is that if you're in that income range, you probably already have other options elsewhere.
What?
And they said as much at that planning board.
But what is middle income? We have to discuss.
Well, in this day and age, it's up in
the family
of
Ford 100%. They said it was 107,000.
And
125%
right.
would be 125 for family of four, which you'd need a lot of money to even rent.
But if you've got income
that
in that range, what you can do is move away a little bit. So you go out to the burbs a bit.
Yeah.
And that's what people typically do.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they move to Roslindale.
Well,
they
Roslindale, Malden.
They go to Malden,
Medford's
whatever, and they get a single-family home with a yard and a set of
Melrose. I know people, Melrose. I mean, and those schools that get better. And
so the thing is that, you know, because we're not addressing the middle-income part of this,
we're
and
loose,
honestly, there is so little that's coming out of Envision that's addressing the middle income.
Well, we'll discuss this further because that is what's coming out in some of these responses.
Yeah, and you know, I sit on that housing working group, and honestly, the thing is, it's advocates for a very, very narrow solution.
So are you like a lone voice?
I've kind of become a lone voice. I wasn't the only one, but I'm the only one who goes to the meetings who speaks that way.
We'll talk more specifically about what happened last night.
Yeah, we can do that and a little bit more at the planning board.
Right, well, they're connected.
All right, when we come back on Cambridge Inside Out.
See you.